If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the light and love of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening our topic is Mystery Schools of Egypt and how ancient initiatory practices are reflected in our life and the challenges of today. So let's begin with a little inner mosey. And we start with taking a deep breath, which brings you spiritually into alignment instantly. Deep breath. And connect and draw down and through your whole being, your higher principles, your spiritual essence, your soul, your monadic I am presence. And as you do, you may experience your body reflecting that alignment. I just had a vivid flash of purple light behind my third eye. And my body is rocking back and forth. And just notice that when you connect with your higher divine components, how that registers. For example, whenever you need to do something that requires a greater integration of your reality, don't just launch into it. Always take a deep breath, say if you're going to give a talk or minister to someone. Whenever that greater portion is required, which I personally think is just about in any interaction we have today, take a deep breath with the intention of bringing yourself forward and integrate it into your bodily temple more consciously. And then just observe how that connection takes place. Some people will have like a jolt to their body, which is called a kriya. It's almost like a little electrical charge. Some people have goosebumps or a feeling of warm oil, kind of like being poured down over your head. Some people get tingles in the crown chakra as the petals of the thousand-petal lotus, the highest, or at least the seventh chakra atop your head. Sometimes that will respond with a fluttering sensation. Sometimes the heart will have a fluttering sensation. Sometimes you'll feel hot energy someplace in the body, sometimes up your spine, sometimes goosebumps. Sometimes just a greater sense of overall vitality and energy in your whole body. Know that we are given by grace just enough energy and light which keeps us viable in our physical bodies. And anything beyond that, we need to call it forth. We need to evoke it. We need to draw it into us and claim it and anchor it. And as I so often said, the easiest way to do that is through your breath, which is the divine spirit of life inside you that breathed you into individuality and that sustains you. Think of that breath as God. It's the spirit of life. And that puts it very, very up close and personal, doesn't it? Yeah, and just allow yourself to bask in that wonderful connection. The minute your intention is to connect with God, it's done instantly. Some of you may feel at some point, if you do, like that connection isn't as clear as you'd like it to be. If that happens to you, notice what you've made wrong. Oh, you'll find it. It's that feeling of guilt. Somewhere you have made yourself or another wrong and have placed out a judgment. And when that occurs, you will feel a block between yourself and the fullness of the divine spirit connection that needs to be cleared. And there's no way to dodge guilt. Guilt will just, like, be with you until you, of your own volition, forgive yourself for whatever it was that you made wrong and judged. That doesn't mean you go through life without any sense of morality or self-governance or discipline or preferences. It just means that when you hold a position of againstness, where you hold yourself in variance and in negativity against another creation of God, you have effectively closed the door to that higher connection to God, because God lives inside everything and everyone. God is the totality of everything that is. God has imbued everything that exists with his, her, self. It's a full bestowal of life from the spirit of life. And if you think of that, that whatever you do to the least, not that anyone is least, nobody is least anything, but as the saying goes, whatsoever you have done to the least of them, quoting Jesus, you have done to me. So whatever we do, whether, you know, Sai Baba has said that we shouldn't even ignore an animal. We shouldn't even treat an animal disrespectfully. You know, whatever it may be, everything needs to be seen and accorded respect, that reverence for life, all life, that respect for every embodiment of divine creativity needs to be automatic in our response to each other and to creation. You know, I can't even toss a pillow or, you know, kick something out of the way anymore. Immediately I feel a check in my spirit that I have treated that energy field disrespectfully, because I don't do it anymore. But I remember when that first started to happen with me, it's like, my gosh, I have to honor everything. I have to respect everything. And it gets more and more close tolerant. I think the closer that you integrate that ongoing, continual awareness of your divinity, the more you move into God consciousness, the more you come under the self-disciplining of living love, so that everything you do, that automatic response is a heartfelt compassion and caring and respect for all life. So tonight our topic is involving mystery schools of Egypt, which we have all, I think without exception, been influenced by, have been students in, have been teachers of, or have come from the stars to inaugurate upon this planet. So we have all had a hand in the ancient mystery schools. Tonight we're looking at Egypt, and primarily the mystery schools of Akhenaten and Nefertiti, the spiritual travelers. But it doesn't mean that we haven't been present for the other ones that were started in all the other ancient cultures as well, or participated in some form. You know, there's always been an otherworldly interaction and presence and mentorship taking place on this planet. Very advanced men and women from this and other worlds have continually had interaction in developing higher consciousness in the indigenous inhabitants of this and other worlds. There's a vast plan, and it's intergalactic. It's interuniversal, and it's omnipresent. Because the spirit of life, when it extended itself as life, it extended to every single orb that you look at in the sky. Every single body in the celestial sphere is inhabited by some form of being. Every dimension, both inside the planet or the sun or the moon, and on the exterior, and in the dimensional realms that extend outward from these various worlds, which are similar to the subtle bodies that we have ourselves as human beings. When there is an initial colonization of any planet, there is a primordial couple, male and female, if that's what you have on that world. You know, not all worlds have a male and a female. Sometimes you have androgynous beings, or I suppose even asexual beings. But let's just slow it down to this particular dimensional universe, and to the very first colonization on our planet, which according to the Keys of Enoch was by a couple from Sirius called Osa, Osi. Yeah, you can see Osiris in that name, can't you? Yeah, well, they came originally from Sirius and Orion, which are like twin couples in the insemination of life here. And yes, our most recent colonization was the Adamic race of Adam and Eve in what was probably the original, well, probably it was the insemination of life about 6,000 years back on this particular aspect of creation. We're only looking at aspects when we get down to our local planet and our most recent historical records. Granted, Earth is many millions of years old, billions of years old. But for the sake of stepping down this understanding, we go from that greater, vaster picture down more into the individual root race that we are now bringing to fruition on this planet, which would be the Adamic root race. Now, going back to the ancient records, you know, I've said before that when the library in Alexandria, Egypt was burned, we lost, according to records, some 70,000 irreplaceable manuscripts, which if we had them today, would bring the link between all religious traditions and all world cultures. We wouldn't have this againstness towards other spiritual traditions and lineages. We would see that they all come out of the same source and that they all are suited to people at different levels of their spiritual understanding. In fact, Sai Baba materialized an amazing Bible. I think it was during the Christmas celebration. It was a small, like a little mini Bible, several inches in size. And in it, he said, there was the complete Bible without, you know, the deletions and, you know, all of the Gospels and all of the books in the Bible that drew the connection from one religious tradition and avatar to the next. And he says that book and its original manuscripts exist today in Russia, which is a really interesting thought. I wonder if anyone knows where that is. But I thought it was interesting because it's something we have all suspected, at everything that we think of today that's limited, when you really understand it, has a depth and a beauty of synthesis about it that draws us all back into oneness. And as we move into the universe governed by the divine spirit, the Holy Spirit, to do that, we must be of one accord. We must be in that spirit of the unified field of Christ consciousness, which is the oneness. It's the unity. It's the interconnectedness of all peoples and all cultures and all life. And where that is, you see a real beauty. And the beauty is brotherhood. The beauty is community. The beauty is the family that we all share as man with a capital M. You know, man, human, was seated throughout the universe. But the human being, the Homo sapien, is indigenous to Earth. And the Homo sapien is a synthesis of many, many star lineages. Many beings came to cooperate to create what is now known as the hue, or the human, which is destined to become the hue man, or the conscious God man, the person that knows God. So many, many came to foster and train and cultivate the consciousness that is now being outpictured upon the earth. So out of Egypt came many very important mystery schools. We have the lineage of Thoth. And Thoth was the master that created, said that he was 52,000 years old. He's an immortalized being. And he created the original grid around the earth. He's also known in Greek by the name of Hermes. He created the original grid for consciousness. And you have that lineage very much at the head of the Egyptian lineages. You have the lineage of Amun-Ra, the lineage of An, the lineage of Aton, the lineage of Isis and Osiris and Horus, and the Dendera school of soul-traveling mystics. You have the Luxor school of Ascension, presided over by the Prince Seraphis Bey. You have then the left eye of Horus school and the right eye of Horus school of initiation, and very much involved with the mystery schools that were started by Akhenaten and Nefertiti. Egypt has such an important role in our planet because, for one thing, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, when they were escaping the infanticide that was started by King Herod, who was trying to find Jesus and was launching a killing frenzy for all children that were of the age of two or younger, the stepfather of Jesus, Joseph, was warned in a dream to get up and immediately take Mary and the infant Jesus to Egypt to dwell there, where they did until the death of King Herod. Now, they were sequestered by the Egyptian Brotherhood there, and they were taken and fostered. And Jesus, and they were all members, you know, of the Great White Brotherhood, too, the Essene Brotherhood, and several other orders at that time, and were also star-seeded from other worlds onto the planet. So they were part of the hierarchy at that time, which included members both indigenous to Earth and beings who had come from other planetary worlds. And this was just an accepted thing in very, very ancient mystery schools. There was always the knowledge of life from other worlds. And so Jesus had his earliest training in this mystery schools of Egypt. And the earliest Christian church, Christian, truly Christian group that is of most ancient origin is the Coptic. And, of course, that is the school that was very much around Jesus in his infancy. So nearly every light worker I have ever met senses an ancient connection with Egypt. And some of you, like me, have been especially attracted to the 18th dynasty of Akhenaten and Nefertiti. And like me, you may also have visited Egypt in this lifetime. I've been there twice and love it. I really felt quite at home in Egypt. So Egypt was actually colonized by people originally migrating there from Atlantis. In fact, people from Atlantis migrated to Greece, the Grecian islands, the Yucatan, Peru, India, North and South America, and other places prior to the final destruction of Atlantis, which didn't happen all at once. You know, like today, there were prophets that foresaw certain calamities coming to Atlantis, and so many people migrated to different lands during that time before the final submergence. So this accounts for the similarity between so many of the ancient cultures with their pyramids and their superior technology and aerial travel and their mummification rites. You know, there's a great, great similarity. And the fact that nearly all of them worship the sun. And here, it isn't the physical sun so much, although that was a degenerated belief that came in later on with the darkening of the ages. But originally, it was the remembrance of the solar dynastic lineages that came from the greater central sun and the great central sun and the great, great central sun and the Syrian connection and the lineages of Ra that came, that was called in Sanskrit the Ravi Kula, which were the dwellers of the sun, you know, the ones that came from the sun. Or in the case of Peru, they were called the Incals, or the Incas, the people of the sun. There's many, many references to the solar dynasty in ancient cultures. And also in their worship, they almost always had the sun. Either they gazed at the sun, or they had the sun as part of their headdresses, or the jewelry they wore, or, for example, in ancient Lemuria, they had the solar disk with the rainbows coming down as their symbol, you know, representing the sun and then the seven rays that came down, representing the lineages that came from the sun. So if you look back and study the origins, before it degenerated into actually worshiping the stars and actually offering human sacrifices to propitiate the, quote, star gods and the solar god, before that, before it degenerated, it was a very, very pure and high teaching and was also foretelling the coming of the one who would be the light of the world, the Son of God, Jesus the Christ. But that understanding of salvation coming from the sun, the great central sun, I think has been endemic in every single one of the ancient world cultures. And certainly none so more so than Akhenaten, who was the first one to, in more recent times, to reinstitute monotheism, you know, the worship of one God, and that one God being represented by, again, the great central sun, although it was depicted as a solar disk with the lineages of the hands extending forth, which represented the solar hierarchy, extending blessings, benevolence, and assistance to this and a myriad of worlds. I feel very, very qualified to speak on this topic because I, not only was I embodied in the 18th dynasty as one of the seven daughters of Nefertiti and Akhenaten, But my very first spiritual teacher who trained me for the mission that I'm fulfilling today was Meritaten, the firstborn daughter of Nefertiti Meknaten. And you would recognize her perhaps as Ankhesepaten, who was the young wife of King Tut. And you would recognize her, perhaps, if you do, spiritually, as the same soul that is incarnated today as Elizabeth Taylor. And I was privileged to actually share this information with her back in 1978. Didn't have a chance to talk to her afterwards, so I don't know how it sat with her, but I was sent by the hierarchy to give her a book, The Reappearance of the Christ. And in the book, I was told to write, you know, who she had been at the time of Nefertiti Meknaten and the relationship to the mission today. And also, my present teacher, John Roger, was embodied at the time with Nefertiti Meknaten. And many of my spiritual family in the movement of spiritual inner awareness are also tracing back lifetimes in that period of time. So it was very, very crucial for me personally, and I think for all of us, because whether or not we were actually incarnated at that time, I'm sure if we were, we were somewhere in that environment at that time, and if we weren't, we were certainly working on the inner planes, because it was such a strategic positioning for the plan that was being unfolded on the earth. And remember, the plan is to create a Christ-conscious race of beings, a synthesis of the best of all of the worlds, all of the kingdoms of nature, all of the lineages of teaching, pointed to creating the Christ, the Anointed One, the Messiah, which was completely embodied and represented and enacted historically by Jesus of Nazareth. But he was like the seed that was implanted in the earth to grow forth a whole family of sons and daughters of God that walk in that unified field that we call Christ consciousness, unity consciousness. And this is what the earth is moving into. And when I say we're going to have that, and I'm quoting Sai Baba here, that at some point, apparently very soon, in 2012, there will be that shift where that part of us that went south, you know, with the fall and got entangled with the idea of separation and difference, that's going to be corrected divinely, internally. That wayward mind, which is really not a true representation of us at all, it's kind of like a negative thought form that's going to be illumined by the power of the Holy Spirit indwelling. It's going to illumine our consciousness and supernaturally transform us from within. And I look forward to that very much, because I think that is the answer to the situations we find in the world today, which really, looking at it from a human level, don't really seem to have any end. We just go from one war to the next, and one tyranny of againstness and hatred to another. So I think, like Sai Baba said, it takes God to bring that correction today. So there was such advanced technology in the ancient cultures, and particularly that we can see exemplified in Egypt, that even today we couldn't replicate what they did then. And we're left scratching our heads and wondering, you know, how did they do that? Well, those of us in the spiritual path know that they had the virile rod, which was kind of like a gravity neutralizer that enabled them to teleport and lift, accompanying the use of the virile rod with mantra. They had the science of the living word at that time, that they were able to actually speak life and speak death. And because of that, that those codes were corrupted and confused in Atlantis during the time of the Tower of Babel, because it looked like mankind was starting to misuse the powers that was taken from the planet at that time. So we don't have that same technology. But, you know, whenever you see Harry Potter with his magician's wand, that's actually a throwback to that ferrule rod that people had in ancient Atlantis and were using in the early colonization periods on this Earth. They had this actual power, and they had the Moxon flame, you know, the flame that we call the ascension flame that transfigured and transformed and also gave forth life. If you study the Vedas, you'll find that many of the spiritual beings that are spoken of were born from the fire, from mantra. So that was part of that ability to create through the spoken word and the power that they had at that time. They also were able to levitate those thousands and thousands of ton stones into place with the ferrule rod, mantra, the science of anti-gravitic science that came from other worlds. And that's why those blocks of stone could be fitted so tightly without mortar that you couldn't even put a razor blade between the stones. And that has puzzled everyone, because you see this type of masonry throughout the world. And of course, this was brought to the planet by beings from other civilizations. Also, there are little ancient replicas of airplanes that were found in a Mayan in the Mayan areas in the Yucatan, that and also Egyptian hieroglyphics that are found in the pyramids that show what to be obviously images of modern-looking helicopters and aircraft and military machinery. So there was a prophetic script that was showing, you know what we're going through today on the planet and some of the things that we have that we're doing war with. And also depicted are the spacecraft and helmeted beings that really resemble our own astronauts during their moonwalk in terms of the gear that they appear to be wearing. And these are found, you know, throughout the world. And today, it's like people, because they have access to the internet and a plethora of manuscripts and information that they don't have to travel all over the world and read anymore. They can just sit with a click of a mouse and bring up almost any kind of information. Now, they're connecting the dots. They're beginning to go, oh, okay. And now we're seeing some really wonderful programming. Ancient astronauts or ancient aliens, I guess it's called, on the History Channel. And other presentations on television that are really, really well done in terms of this information that is, beginning to show how we all fit together and what is right with us rather than what's been wrong with us. We have a great rightness that's beginning to emerge that will begin to, I hope, bridge the disparity that we see when people don't have full access to the higher understanding. They tend to separate and alienate themselves from things that they're not familiar with. And that's, that's symptomatic of just, pardon me for saying it so bluntly, but it's just indicative of ignorance. So, will the answers become clear? I think so, from even the proof that's emerging today from the art world. You know, when you look at some of the ancient artwork from the Middle Ages, you see spaceships, aerial craft, depicted plain as day, from the Dark Ages. So all of these things were encoded in artwork when they could not be spoken about outwardly. You know, it was always the artists that were the troubadours of truth, the forerunners of revelation. It was always the artists in ancient times, or the poets, the bards, the troubadours. They could put it on the stage. They could enact it. They could sing about it. They could tell jokes about it. but they couldn't openly speak about it without censure from the ignorant people who were trying to suppress any kind of knowledge in those dark ages. So we have a long history of star visitors on our planet and interacting with the ancient civilizations from Earth's earliest habitation. And they came from other worlds, as I've said before, for various reasons, to mine, to explore, to mate with their twin flames, to create colonies, to visit, and also to assist the indigenous Earth dwellers in surviving here. You know, after humanity was locked into the third dimension at the time of the fall, they really had a hard time surviving, and they needed a lot of help. So wherever the ancient visitors from the stars landed on Earth, they were taken by the indigenous Earth people to be gods and goddesses. And this, in turn, formed the basis for all of the legends and mythologies that we have to this day. And these were basically of real beings and stories told about their interactions at the time, which with time, you know, gathered more and more, what would you call it, folk legend, and became more embellished. But they were actually originally of star beings that came to the planet, like the gods of Olympus, for example. And this is what formed the basis for many religions. And you know, perhaps it could be accurate for me to say that every religion can be traced back to either an avatar or other advanced visitor to Earth, or one of their star-seeded ambassadors. So that's where you have every single religion mentions God, angels, goddesses, something coming down to Earth from the sky in some sort of flying conveyance, whether it's a vehicle or a great swan or a dragon or whatever. They come down to Earth flying on something. And petroglyphs from all over the world show these flying discs and what appears to be, again, alien beings or astronauts. So sightings and appearances of people from the stars have been with us since ancient times. And the only reason why it seems so hidden today, I think, is largely because there's a great embarrassment, I think, from the people in the military and the government, the small group that actually does know about the clandestine agreements that were made with certain segments of government, and how out of control we really are, and that we're not in control. I mean, how do you tell that to people without just, you know, really fessing up to the fact that you made some bad choices? So, you know, people can only be fooled so long, and then the truth comes out. And we're living in a time when the truth and the disclosure is coming out, and it's on television, and people are fessing up, and, you know, all the covers are getting blown now, and there's no place to hide. We're all in this together, and we all either get out of here together, or we all stay here and go down with the ship together. And I think they recognize that. So where are these more advanced visitors set up habitation? They also establish schools of higher learning. And always higher learning of the highest kind has to do with knowing who you are as a divine being. You know, sure, they brought in agriculture and helped people to survive physically. But there's no point to surviving physically if you live like an animal and don't know who you are. You know, what's the point of prolonging life at that point? So the important thing was to enhance consciousness. And that was done through a variety of means. You know, the earliest Homo sapien, you know, that became the so-called intelligent, upright being from, you know, an ape-like humanoid to, a self-conscious being That came with the assistance of a group of beings called the Kumaras that came here from Venus long, long time ago. They were called the Lords of the Flame. And they were the ones that sparked higher consciousness or self-consciousness in indigenous human beings. But the early visitors also came, in addition to Venus, they came from Mars, Mercury, Saturn, Jupiter, all the planets, you know, in our solar system, and also from Sirius and Orion and Pleiades and Arcturus and other realms and dimensions. And they came with, you know, various plans, you know, various ideas. And what you need to realize is that beyond the little narrow divisions that we have on planet Earth, the other worlds, particularly the Christ conscious worlds, the sacred planets, they all work together. You know, they don't fight. They're not part of the fighting astral aliens that you hear about so much today in modern times. These are advanced lords and ladies of light that are God-realized beings that come from very, very advanced civilizations and are like gods compared to the consciousness we have here. They would, you know, be what we would classify as divine incarnations, divine beings, very much so. And they all work together. You know, there's no division when you reach that unified field of oneness and higher God consciousness. There's no such thing as separation. They completely outgrew that a long time ago. So tonight I did want to focus particularly on this great celestial ambassador who visited this planet and made such a great contribution to restoring higher consciousness. And that was the Pharaoh Akhenaten and his twin flame, Nefertiti. I also have a strong connection with Nefertiti because in this present lifetime, she was incarnated as Helena Rorik, who is my spiritual mother, as I've often mentioned, and I was a friend for 22 years of her son, Svetoslav Rorik, and his wife, Devika Rani Rorik. And spent many, many months with them and many hours of conversation and sharing. And he mentored me in my early days as well. So the son of Helena Rorik was one of the ascended masters on Earth, living openly on the Earth. And I first met him in 1972. So there's that connection also with that dynasty. And I first heard of Akhenaten during my early training by the Ashtar Command, as I mentioned, and my first spiritual mentor, Virginia Berta, who had been Meritaten, the firstborn daughter of Nefertiti and Akhenaten. And everybody in that early group, which the Ashtar Command was training 10 teachers in a period of 10 years, and I was one of those 10. And I think I actually am the only one that ended up being actually a teacher. But nevertheless, I carried on the work of my first mentor, Virginia, after she passed away, and went on to do what I'm doing today. So that itself was a mystery school, which was quite extraordinary that it cropped up in all places in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we actually had an Egyptian mystery school complete with the scribe from the time of the 18th dynasty, who was one of the women in the group. And she actually studied Egyptian hieroglyphics so she could write our stories, our individual stories of how we, quote, came into the light and became part of this group. And she wrote it in hieroglyphics in our building, which was our school. It was an extraordinary time. So I've also had the opportunity of meeting at least learning the identity of the other 7 daughters. And you find that the story of the 7 daughters kind of playing again and again throughout mythology. And they actually represent the 7 stars in the Pleiadian system. I don't want to go into that. It's one of those esoteric things. But there's a strong relationship between the seven sisters and the seven lords of the seven rays. They're like the twin flame representations of the seven major Choans or lords of the seven rays. But that's for another time and place. But just as a little aside, I thought that was interesting. Now, another one of the daughters, which, well, I told you about Elizabeth Taylor, who also had been the real Cleopatra. So no wonder she enacted that role so perfectly in the film. And I have no doubt that Richard Burton has most likely had been Mark Antony. So it's interesting how these, you know, what we've been in the past sometimes has its reflection right down into the present day. So the job of Pharaoh Akhenaten was to start inserting the energy appropriate for our restoration to Christ consciousness. That was like the first entry of the reestablishing of Christ consciousness, or the unified field of the one God. The one God, the teachings of the one God. Can't wrap my tongue around that tonight for some reason. Was preparing the way for the eventual advent of Jesus of Nazareth. So again, you see how the different waves, let's say, of light workers come in to prepare the way for the next wave of light to come onto the planet. So the great being Akhenaten and his divine consort Nefertiti were Christ-conscious beings who came from the solar dynasty of Sirius, the great central sun systems. And the father and mother of Akhenaten, Taiye and Aiye, back in Atlantis, had the first school of Christ consciousness. And from that school came 1,000 people, 1,000 beings, initiates, who actually had moved into Christ consciousness during the time of Atlantis. That was huge. So, in a sense, that was like the starting of what we are now in really active process of bringing to fruition on this planet, and certainly preparatory to the great dimensional shift that we are just on the very brink of going through, you know, as a collective here on the planet. So Akhenaten and Nefertiti were spiritual travelers. They were of the lineage of the travelers, which meant they were able to move into their soul body and move at will through the different dimensions. And they were members of the Order of Melchizedek and initiators and hierophants of the Egyptian mystery school of the right eye of Horus. Now, before you ever got anywhere near the right eye of Horus and their teachings, you had to undergo 12 years of study in the left eye of Horus. And, you know, that had to do with emotional clearing and purification and facing and mastering all of the temptations of the lower nature, and confronting and mastering every form of fear. In the left eye of Horus teachings, you had to learn to trust your inner feelings and eventually to allow yourself to be guided by your intuition. So that was a very, very important training that either you have already gone through and may be recapitulating and revisiting in your life today, or you may be going through that training now upon the inner planes and in some form of reflective teaching in the physical world today. How would that look? Well, it would look like you're doing inner child work, working with your basic self, trying to overcome addictive patterns or negative states of consciousness in the emotional body. It could be you facing something that you really are afraid of. It could be actual a phobia of some sort, fear of height, fear of people, fear of crowds. Could be any number of fears, fear of death, panic attacks, whatever. It could be you learning for the first time to get in contact with your true inner feelings and connecting to your heart, connecting to your inner self, or connecting to your higher self, or connecting with your intuition. Any and all of those things could be things that you're involved with today. It could be rebirthing, for example, or human potential trainings. Anything that would enable you to be more spiritually connected and have greater mastery over your lower self would be part of the teachings of the left eye of Horus. And, of course, the left eye governs the right side of the brain. So it's taking that tendency to be so logical and so mental that you can't really get beyond the logical lower mind. It's taking that and softening it and allowing that more gentle side to come forward. I think it might also pertain to many of you who are more drawn to the goddesses or the feminine form of God, because, the mother has that softer energy, and there's a lot of really powerful, wonderful spiritual teachers on the planet today in female forms, and so that may be one of the reasons why you're drawn to that softer energy. So that's the school that I think you see a lot of people on the planet today that are just coming into the light. Obviously, they are undergoing the left eye of Horus teachings. And Horus in the Egyptian trinity of Isis, Osiris, and Horus represents Christ consciousness. That represents the son daughter of God. As the son daughter of God becomes Christed, that's the whole purpose of the school of Horus, is to develop that consciousness of divine sonship. Now the right eye of Horus, as I said, is the advanced school of initiation. And the right eye of Horus is the school in which you go beyond identifying with the material form. You begin to really understand yourself as the light itself. You know, you are spirit, you are divine, you are light. And that's what the right eye training is involved with. So obviously, if those of you who are, you know, really working to become self-realized, to meditate and to know yourself beyond your form, beyond your body, those of you who are transcending body consciousness, transcending the lower self, learning to soul travel, learning to operate in your light body, or to move into your Merkaba. All of that is the right eye of Horus teaching. And, you know, if you're still in the left eye training or recapitulation, I think you're really being confronted with some major fears today. And some of the major fears that people are being confronted with today basically have to do with physical survival issues. For example, root chakra stuff. Security, your home, your food, finances, and every manner of fear about your future, or, you know, what's going to happen in the world. All of that is pretty much has to do with that root chakra, that first chakra. And a lot of people are going through that today in the masses that are not initiates, and also those who are initiates. Sometimes they just go to sleep to their higher consciousness and they just buy into the fear. And that's what that's all about. And another area that people are really going through today are second chakra issues, which would be involving relationships. People's sexual identity, their sexual expression or preference, or marriage, family, all the issues that have to do with the inner child and the sense of belonging and being loved and being accepted, identity issues, how you feel about yourself. Also, where you have excessive obsessive desires or are working to overcome addictive patterns. These would all be issues that would be part of that left eye of Horus initiation that you might be going through in this lifetime. If you are, maybe you didn't quite master it when you were in Egypt, or at another time, maybe this is like your last opportunity to really master those things that have been up till now mastering you. So if so, take heart and know that you've either had some experience with this in the past and you can draw on that experience, or you're going to get through it just fine, because we all do eventually. But deal with it. You know, do what you have to do to master those levels. Another area is the third chakra issues, which have very much to do with personal influence, personal achievement, the dynamics of success, the fear of failure, and power issues of every type. You see a lot of that working out in the government political arenas today, and in every form of leadership, and also in the financial departments of life. And it also involves whatever disempowers or undermines your ability to just stand quietly in your own divine empowerment, your own sense of self. So it has to do with confronting and mastering all of these issues. And all of these issues form the curriculum of the mystery school of the left eye of Horus. So after you've mastered that, after 12 years, and hopefully by that time you've mastered that, then you learn to move through life by trusting your purified feelings and following your intuition, which is your inner master or the Holy Spirit or the inner teacher or the inner knower. I speak about that a lot. And then you graduate to the mystery school of the right eye of Horus. And here I would say primarily you learn to wield the power of the sacred heart and how to attain that perfect balance between the heart and the mind. I spoke about that a lot last seminar. So when you make the mind the heart and the heart the mind, and you balance those two levels, you move into that unified field. The right and left lobes of the brain have been unified, and you graduate. And that's what is immediately before all advanced initiates on our planet today. And we will be the vanguard that will carry, like a huge tugboat, we will carry the ship of humanity to someplace within the higher grids of higher consciousness. So in the right eye of Horus, you learn how to live in the unified field of Christ consciousness, bottom line. And this is the school of the law of one, where you gradually come to directly experience and know of the divine consciousness, connection, and unity of all life. All life forms are to be recognized as part of the one life. So the right eye of Horus teaching is about transcending the limitations of matter, the limitations of space and time, and being able to operate as a multidimensional Lord of Light. Advanced training in creating and operating in your light body is given, creating your Merkaba, the breathing techniques and things that our brother Drunvalo Melchizedek has been teaching are part of that. And the goal of the Right Eye of Horus training is to maintain, the ideal is to maintain a continuity of consciousness. So as you pass from one dimensional level to the next, you don't lose conscious awareness. And in order to make this transition into the next dimension of the Earth, we need to have that light body, that Merkaba, activated around our auric fields, otherwise we will be carried in a sleep state of suspended animation, which is, it's okay, you know, it's not too bad. But if you want to be conscious, then you need to build that Merkaba. And the only one really to teach that is Drunvalo. He's the master of teaching you how to operate in the Merkaba. And this requires your complete identification with yourself as spirit and as the light itself, rather than with your physical body. So the culmination of this training used to take place in the Great Pyramid, where the candidate was placed for 3 days in the great sarcophagus. And the lid was placed on the sarcophagus. Doesn't it creep you out? It creeps me out when I think of that. I remember that. Oh, man. Yeah. The lid is placed on the sarcophagus. And you had to descend into the halls of Amenti. The halls of Amenti were about 1,000 feet into the earth. And these are the astral realms, or the bardos of earth. I guess you could call them hell worlds too, because I'm sure they're there. But here came the biggest test of all, was to remain God-conscious, in full conscious awareness of your perfect, untouchable divinity as the light itself while you descended into the halls of Amenti. You had to do that to survive, because otherwise, whatever you thought of, whatever you imagined, immediately manifested. So you had to have that perfect control of your emotions and thoughts, and really to stay in divine neutrality while you were in the Hall of Amenti. And exhibiting any form of fear or negativity in the Halls of Amenti basically spelt your doom. And here it's interesting, because if you remember when Jesus was crucified, the first thing he did, he descended into the center of the earth. And some translations said he descended into hell. And I believe that he actually went down into the halls of Amenti and released those souls that had been entrapped there from the time of those failed initiations. And it said that they were entrapped under the Great Pyramid. And I do believe this is where the great initiate, who himself passed through the initiation in the pyramid of Cheops in Giza, the Great Pyramid, I believe he went down during those 3 days and released the entrapped souls that were there in the center of the earth. Interesting, isn't it? And you know, that soul release is something that a lot of us do as members of the Office of the Christ and the Order of Melchizedek. As conscious light workers, we are continually seeking out places where souls are entrapped in fear, which, you know, closes them in to their own thought form and creates their own hellish states. I know when we were traveling in Scotland and Ireland and throughout Great Britain, we would constantly give a discourse to the discarnate spirits that were entrapped in the graveyards, or still sitting on the graves, or hanging out around those areas waiting, I suppose, for the last trumpet, when they're going to be raised incorruptible But nobody told them to go on, that there was life beyond in the other dimensions. So, again, you know, limited understanding entraps you. So it's important to wake up. So now it's the candidate, you know, when they're in that hole of a mente, you know, if they're able to maintain equanimity and to stay cool and calm and unaffected by whatever appears, then they're able to maintain that divine awareness of who they are as light, that nothing can touch them, nothing can hurt them, and they just watch the show. And that's why we need to train ourselves physically in our daily life to not react to things fearfully or negatively. Train yourself to operate out of the objective observer. Keep that impersonal observer, that witness self, going. And train yourself not to react. Train yourself when you're asleep at night and having a dream. Train yourself to stay conscious when you're in the dream, when you're in the waking dream you call your daily life, or when you're in sleep and sound asleep. Train yourself to automatically know that nothing can touch you, nothing can hurt you. The only thing you're affected by are your own thoughts. Your own thoughts. Nothing else can touch you. So your own thoughts are what create your experience in the halls of a mente, as well as here upon this earth. So when you are able to maintain soul awareness, you're able then to transcend those halls of a mente, and then you travel back to the great central sun on Sirius, and you're crowned at that point as an initiate, and in some cases as a grand hierophant. And then you're allowed to go back to your body in the Great Pyramid, and the candidate goes forth as a totally transformed being from that point on, no longer regarded as a mere mortal. So it was no small task to pass through the left eye, the right eye, and the initiation in the Great Pyramid. So to summarize again, the left eye of Horus, one faces and overcomes one's fears and learns to trust one's inner feelings and intuition. The right eye of Horus, one masters the balance between the heart and the mind and learns to identify fully as being the divine light itself rather than just a physical body. So after mastering the light initiations of the right and left eyes of Horus, when you graduate from those mystery schools, then and only then was one allowed to enter the most advanced school of all. And that is the inner mystery school of the Beloved, or the school of the Living Word. Now, this is the school of the mystical or spiritual travelers, as they're called, or the school of the way shower. There's several different words. I could say the original Gurmukhi names, but they're copyrighted by one of the teachings on the planet, so I can't use those more exact words. But let's just say it's the mystery school of the Beloved. I think that's the best definition of it. And here one man masters the element of sound, both the outer sound and the inner. You know, usually when I say sound, people think of something that's audible. But it's actually the inaudible or spiritually audible sound current that I'm speaking about. But when you first enter the school, often you're taught musical theory, harmonics, first. You know, you start with the outer first, and then the inner sound current and conscious soul travel, or as I like to call it, awareness expansion, because you don't travel so much as you expand your awareness. And you you are trained in that school until you identify not only with being the living light of God itself, but you now must realize that you are also the living Word of God. In other words, you are the hue. You are the sound of God. You are the name of God. That goes into a teaching that's going to be very much the keynote of the next avatar. Prema Sai Baba will teach that you are God. And not in a negative way where you oust God from. You know, there's always a supreme God. But in terms of identifying as self, we will have the teaching to fully identify with our divinity and also to recognize that that divinity is internal as your spirit and your monad, your soul, your atma, and it's also external in that you live and move and have your being in a greater creative, intelligent source. So there's always those two aspects, the inner and the outer. No matter what you're studying, no matter what your understanding, no matter what your revelation is, there's an inner application and an outer, or an inner revelation and an outer replication. I'm having trouble with my tongue tonight. But anyway, you get my drift. So today, I think all true light workers will be found in one of these mystery schools, and all of the masses of human beings are at this time being prepared to pass through one or more of these schools. And that's part of what we're doing on the planet, those of us that are teaching and writing and counseling and working with people, is to help them advance through these levels. Whatever their thing is that they're caught up in, we are here to help them take their next step as ambassadors from other worlds. Now, bear in mind that in just like in ancient times, there were many, many different mystery schools. There were the, for example, the... the Atlantean, the Hebrew, the Chaldean, the Sumerian, the African, the Arabian, the South American, the Central American, the Grecian, the Indian, Oriental, and today, yes, the North American mystery schools. We have all of these mystery schools that are no longer... in today's age, needing to be so mysterious because we're at the time of the externalization of the spiritual hierarchy and the various ashrams and schools of teaching. In fact, these weekly seminars that I'm giving constitute mystery school teachings that are going out over the airwaves, which was prophesied by the Master Joel Gould, that would start taking place sometime after 1975. So it's part of, what's been prophesied, that what was hidden before is now being proclaimed from the rooftops. And that's part of the great age of the Holy Spirit, when all things that were hidden before are now coming to light. So, I thought it was good to mention Akhenaten and Nefertiti and the 18th dynasty tonight, because so many of you who are listening to these seminars, excuse me, you're going to have a strong attraction to Egypt, I think, and to the 18th dynasty. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is that you're completing today a mission that many of you had your first training for back in those times. And so if what I'm saying to you kind of triggers recall and ahas and acknowledgments, it's kind of like an important benchmark for your spiritual life to realize, wow, I identify with these lessons, and there's part of me that knows I was there. There's part of me that really relates to this information. And knowing that you're coming to the end and the culmination, the grand finale of what you've worked so hard to achieve, I think is really important. And most of us started our missions back in Atlantis, and then we progressed to Egypt, and then, you know, went forth to different world civilizations and walked with the different masters and the different avatars. I believe that whenever there was light on the planet, we, the collective light workers of the world today, were present in some form, in some dimension, and lending a hand to be part of the unfolding of what today, gosh, we have ringside seats to watch the grand finale as we actually move and into the fifth dimension, into the realm of living love. We actually get to watch and participate as the greatest shift of the ages takes place. Well, maybe we saw it before in Atlantis. Maybe we saw it in a prior root race. But the fact is, we're alive and able to consciously participate today. So part of the purpose of our weekly seminars is to encourage each other and to remind each other that this is a good thing that we're going through. And it also signifies a graduation and a completion. And it gives rise to the fact we need to celebrate. We need to celebrate who we are and what we are and our passage through this magnificent implantation and explanation of consciousness. You know, we've been part of it. We've been part of the early colonization and part of the formation of the teaching. And now we get to watch actually the culmination of what we've worked so hard for so very long. So I think you also probably recognize in your life that things are going on that are very reminiscent of what you have already very likely experienced in Egypt as a student in the mystery schools, and specifically with Nefertiti and Akhenaten. I dare say that if you're listening tonight and you're still awake and really interested in this topic, it's a given that you were part of those mystery schools. Now, the Advanced School of the Beloved, I believe, is found hidden in the inner teachings of just about every world religion. There's a lineage of travelers, which if I were to read it to you, which I'm not supposed to because it's secret knowledge to our particular inner circle, but you can, if you want, take a class called The Travelers Through the Ages with the Peace Theological Seminary and College of Philosophy that I used to be involved with in teaching and creating classes for years ago. But it's actually online. It's called PTS. You can access it through the MSIA Works MSIA.com website, and you can actually take a course on the internet or in person if you're here in the Los Angeles area and study the lineages of the travelers through the ages. You'll be just amazed at how many of the great people that you've studied about at school were actually of that lineage of the travelers. It's quite wonderful. The lineage of the travelers comes from the order of the Son of God, Jesus the Christ, the order of John the Beloved, because Jesus passed the keys to John at the time that he was being crucified, and the inner mystical teachings found as the heart of all religions. You will find it in Hinduism through the teachings of Lord Rama, the first human avatar, today through the Lord Sai Baba, cosmic avatar, Satya Sai Baba. In Buddhism, you'll find it through the lineage of Milarepa. You'll find it in the lineage of Kabir. You'll find it in the lineage of Khalil Gibran. Guru Nanak, Pythagoras, Apollonius of Tyana, the Comte de Saint-Germain. Yeah, it's all over the place. Many, many wonderful discoveries await you. Maybe at some point I'll do a seminar on some of the European mystery schools, because, again, you have mystery schools cropping up in Europe and France, and a lot of stuff going on in France. A lot of really wonderful things that will delight your heart when you realize how beautiful the bigger picture is. You're not going to lose anything. You're going to gain a great deal more and validate everything in life and in your life, I think, a great deal more with more and more information about who you really are and something of your cosmic history. And we're moving into this wonderful age of the Holy Spirit, which is a feminine energy. It's a soft heart-based energy. And so that's why the heart has to lead us as we go forth now. We need to be people of heart and people that have a heartfelt response to each other, to events, and to all life. It's a time to live the compassion that our brother, the Dalai Lama, so perfectly exemplifies. And I think the beautiful spirit of brotherhood that John Roger and John Morton and the movement of spiritual inner awareness, they are so much of the cutting edge of this new teaching. It's amazing. It's really cutting-edge work that's being done through the University of Santa Monica that they've started and the Peace Theological Seminary with actual classes in spiritual mastery, you know, and the multidimensional self, just marvelous things that are available for you to study actually in the physical realm. I mean, how rare is that to have access to that kind of teaching on the physical planet today? So, again, it's there for you. And if you want more information, go to msia.org and enjoy. So I think we will go out chanting Hue. And Hue is the mantra that's always chanted during the Golden Ages. It is that sound that most perfectly reflects the absolute supreme Godhead that is beyond name and form, such as we know it, but is reflected through every name and every form as the primordial word of God, the divine sound of God, sound current. So let's take a deep breath. Been listening to Commander Lady Athena of the Ashtar Galactic Command, and God willing, I will be with you this time next week. Adonai.